You are Locked On Chargers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Chargers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer, and on today's show, also joined by one of the original members of the show, John Kegley, in with us. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word, and you can get 20% off your next order. So go check out the best protein bar out there, guys. Before we get started, we are three writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and I also write for the LA Football Network. We've been covering the Chargers for over six seasons now, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly. And now this is our third season, going on fourth season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, what a weekend. I mean, I think we've all been buzzing a little bit about the Chargers head coaching search, and over the weekend, we got to see a lot of those guys in action in the playoffs. But first, let me welcome in all of our new listeners. We definitely appreciate you guys checking out the show and appreciate you guys helping us grow this show to where it is right now. And a special thank you to all of our loyal listeners as well. But I think we have a very good show planned for you guys today. We obviously don't have a ton to talk about the Chargers and, you know, their offseason and all of that stuff right now, because the Chargers need to find a new head coach first before we know what kind of personnel they need to bring in. But we are going to be getting into three defensive free agent replacements for some guys on the Chargers who are going to be free agents in 2021 to start the show, guys like Melvin Ingram and Rayshon Jenkins. So we'll start off with that, and then we'll be getting into all of the coaching matchups from this weekend for the guys that the Chargers have planned on or have already, for the guys who the Chargers plan on or have already interviewed for their head coaching position. So in the second segment, we're going to talk about Brandon Staley and his effort against the Seattle Seahawks. And we'll also get into Arthur Smith and his disappointing showing in the playoffs and their loss to the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday. And then to wrap up the show, I think this is the one that was really exciting because it was two candidates that were playing each other. Brian Daboll and Matt Eberflus both faced off in the playoffs, and Brian Daboll ended up taking that one. But I do think that both coaches had good showing. So a lot to get into today. Let's go ahead and get started. Ryan Daly from BoltBeat.com came out with an article that said three possible defensive free agents to sign. And I know for the free agency period isn't starting until March, so this is a little bit early and a little bit preemptive, but I do think it brings up a bigger discussion about if the Chargers should be looking for replacements for some of these guys or if they should be looking to retain them. So the first guy on the list is William Jackson III to replace Michael Davis. And I think that might be surprising to a lot of people because, yes, Michael Davis is an unrestricted free agent, but at the same time, he was undoubtedly the Chargers' best corner in 2020. So, David, I understand that William Jackson, I think they're making a very good case to bring him in, but if you're having to replace Michael Davis, I mean, what is the real gain that you're getting? Because you're losing your best corner and then you're adding another corner who's been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much benefit to me at all. I mean, he's not the type of guy that I'm looking to bring in to replace Michael Davis. He's the guy I want to bring in to pair with Michael Davis. And that means that one of the other corners has to get let go. And for me, that's Casey Hayward. I mean, you know, unfortunately, he's on the other side of 30. He is dealing with a lot of nagging injuries. And, you know, whenever you get on that other side of 30, injuries tend to take a little bit longer to heal, and they might not heal the way they're supposed to. And that speed, you're just not going to get that back. So Jackson's much younger. He's also produced at a fairly good level the last several years. And I'd like to see them, you know, cut Casey Hayward and take that money that they're saving off the cap and give that to William Jackson. And then you have two pretty young corners, if you're able to get Michael Davis locked up on a contract, that are guys in their mid-20s that can be, you know, your bookend corners for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Well, and I think you're hoping in that situation, too, that the savings that you'll get from cutting Casey Hayward would go towards signing William Jackson. And, I mean, I think the thought of Michael Davis and William Jackson as opposed to William Jackson and Casey Hayward is something that just sounds better. I mean, right now with how Casey Hayward played last year, and the Chargers with that wouldn't have a lot, but they would still have to take some dead cap hit from the Casey Hayward Jr. contract. But I do think that Michael Davis probably should be, you know, up there, if not number one priority. I know you can make the argument for Hunter Henry as well, but I do think he's probably the top guy for the Chargers they should be going after. And it might cost you a pretty penny. I mean, Jalen Ramsey signed for $20 million per season. That's the very top end. But even when you get towards the bottom of the top 10 in annual average value, you're looking at about $15 million, $14 million. So that might be the price tag for Michael Davis. But William Jackson, I mean, has been pretty good. He's been solid. He's been available for most games. I mean, was able to play in at least 14 games the last two seasons, and that's obviously something. But Michael Davis has been mostly available too. That's one thing we haven't had to worry about with him very much. And I think the biggest thing for me is how much he's improved in, you know, creating takeaways, actually getting a pick six on Tom Brady this year, getting his head around, being top 10 in passes defensed this year with 14. So I think he's made such improvements that it would be tough to let him go now that you're finally getting to the part that you thought he could achieve when you first brought him in. But let's look at the next one. And this one has some ties for certain reasons, depending on which head coach the Chargers want to end up going with. And that is saying that the Chargers should replace Melvin Ingram with Trent Murphy, who's currently on the Buffalo Bills. And John, I do agree that Melvin Ingram probably won't come back. I mean, if you ask him, I think he's going to say that he's becoming a tight end in 2021 anyway, so he might not even be an option for that position. But do you think that Trent Murphy would be the guy to kind of come in there and be a rotational pass rusher to go along with, you know, Bosa, Uchenna, and Wosu? I mean, maybe even Jerry Tillery?
Well, I think he would probably be a good backup person. Rotational, I don't know how many plays I'd give him. I mean, Isaac Rochelle doesn't even get that many plays a game, and he's considered a rotational piece. But then again, you don't know who your next coach is either. As you mentioned, if we get Brian Daboll, he's probably going to want to go after Trent Murphy as someone to bring on this roster. And I know Telesco loved his Indianapolis Colts ties when he came here. Anthony Lynn loved his Buffalo Bills ties. So I'm guessing Dable's got to be the same thing. But, you know, if you go with a different coach, like if you were to go with Robert Saleh, he's probably going to want to pick a 49ers player that's on free agency to be that rotational piece. So it really depends on what coach you get, and that will really help pick who fits. As far as just Murphy himself goes, I think this is a guy who could probably give you a few good snaps a game. As far as if you were to make him a full game starter, I don't think he'd produce very well. If, say, Joey Bosa goes down and he needs to take over the reins for 3 weeks, I don't think he'd produce very well, but I think he'd probably at least last. I don't think you'd have to worry about him missing games because of injury. You brought up earlier before the game, he was healthy scratches before a lot of games. I wasn't able to really look up injury history for him. I didn't really see one. So I'd like to say he'd be available for most of it.
Yeah, he's had a pretty healthy career. But you're not bringing that guy in either to get a double-digit sacks, right? You're only bringing him to be a small part. And then if somebody is hurt, because Joey Bosa obviously has a very checkered past, even Uchenna Nwosu has been injured a lot at times. So I think to have someone like that, I don't think it's a terrible idea, especially with the number that it could be, because, I mean, he was a healthy scratch all those times. But maybe that means he doesn't have a great relationship with Brian Daboll. Obviously, they're on different sides of the ball, but maybe he is seeing something there that would scare him away from it. But I think that's just a defensive line there that they're, you know, kind of switching up throughout the year. I think he's a fine player, never more than 9 sacks in a season. Every other season besides that, he had no more than 5. So he's not going to be a dominant pass rusher. I think Uchenna Nwosu can be an every down edge defender for this team, but they do need better depth because of those injuries. I'd rather have a young guy, but I don't mind a cheaper veteran presence at that position at all. But let's get to the last guy that they think needs to be replaced, and that is Rayshon Jenkins. And I think that in a vacuum isn't that far away from what the Chargers really need, just because I do think that Rayshon Jenkins had a fine season. I think that the yards after the catch this year was something that really surprised me from him, just because we know that he has had issues tackling, and when it was at free safety, he's the last line of defense, and those missed tackles turn into touchdowns a lot of the times, David. But they're saying here that Xavier Woods from the Cowboys is a guy that could be a potentially cheaper investment, even though he's been a starter, so maybe he wouldn't. But Rayshon Jenkins, I think, at least has worked himself into a chance where, depending on who they end up bringing back, could be high on the Chargers list of guys to bring back.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that, you know, people around the Chargers organization has spoken very highly of Rayshon Jenkins.
But one of those guys, Anthony Lynn, who said he was elite, is now gone.
Right. Right, of course. And, yeah, I was going to bring that up. Yeah, definitely his biggest advocate is now not in the building. But I think if you look at Rayshon Jenkins and you value him the correct way, the proper way, I mean, then, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind bringing him back. I mean, he was mostly available. I mean, that's one of the big things. You got to be able to suit up and go out there and perform. And, you know, he does play very well, and he's shown some versatility. You know, he's played free safety, played strong safety, you know, and he's been mostly decent at both of those positions. So, for Rayshon, I feel like if the Chargers give him a fair deal and not, you know, not look to, you know, as long as Rayshon's not asking for an astronomical amount of money and, you know, he gets a decent contract, I wouldn't mind bringing him back. I mean, I feel like he was pretty decent. But as far as Xavier Woods is concerned, 5 picks in his career, the past 3 seasons, at least 50-plus tackles. So he's been solid. I mean, nothing to, you know, write home to mom about. But, I mean, if you had to replace him, then, yeah, I mean, he's an okay guy. But I think there's some questions about the attitude, right, John?
Yeah, there was a interview earlier this year with how bad the Cowboys defense was playing, and when they talked to Xavier Woods, he was saying you can't expect guys to go 100% for 70 plays, and I'm like, well, then what are you doing out there? What are you here playing football for? You're in the NFL. You're supposed to go 100% every single play. I'm pretty sure Joey Bosa does that. Mike Williams went 100% with a messed-up shoulder for almost a whole year. He didn't complain about it. What are you complaining about? You're fully healthy. You should be playing hard. I don't want to bring that kind of attitude to this kind of locker room.
And I don't think those comments are going to help him. I mean, I think that's honestly the reality. And I think it's not what you think of when you're thinking 100% on every play. It's, you know, hey, a running back's stood up. I'm 20 yards away. Do I get in there and try to, you know, help and finish that tackle? Or am I going to kind of jog over there? You know what I mean? And I think you definitely want the guy who's trying to finish every play through the whistle. So even though I think it is the truth what he's saying to some extent, it just doesn't help him to be that honest, frankly. So I do think that could be a concern. But I think the bigger concern is you're not really getting an upgrade at the position. I mean, you'd be getting maybe a serviceable guy, which I think is what Rayshon Jenkins is at this point, probably league average for his position. But I wouldn't want to overpay either of those guys. But obviously, we'll have more time to watch more film on guys like this and other free agent finds we think would be a good fit for the Chargers as the offseason progresses. But we do have some coaching matchups we have to get into and some Chargers head coaching candidates that have playoff games over the weekend. So in the next segment, we'll be getting into Brandon Staley, and then we'll also be getting into Arthur Smith's bad day against the Baltimore Ravens coming up right after this. But first, I need to tell you guys that the official betting sponsor of the Locked On Chargers podcast is BetOnline.ag. The playoffs are here, guys. We just had a wild weekend of playoff games. Hopefully, you guys were able to get your bets in and win some money. But if not, it's not too late because we have a place for you, and it's the only place that has you covered and the only place that we trust, and that's BetOnline.ag. You can find the best spreads. You can find the best prop bets on BetOnline.ag, and you can bet on any kind of sports, especially with basketball going on. But as we get closer to the Super Bowl, the days for you to bet on the NFL is coming to a close, so make sure you guys get in there right now, and they will even give you some free money because if you guys sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON, you can get your 50% welcome bonus. That's a Locked On, all caps, one word for 50% welcome bonus at BetOnline.ag. All right, guys, well, this was a very exciting weekend to be a Chargers fan, or at least as exciting as it can be when you're not taking part in the festivities, right? Usually watching the playoffs is a lot harder when your team doesn't make the playoffs, but when the team that you're following is, you know, looking at a lot of these coaches who are playing in these games or coaching in these games, I should say, it gives it a little bit of extra juice. So I think the biggest guy over the weekend that maybe had the needle move for them, and it wasn't in a good way, was Arthur Smith. And I think when you have a performance like that, you only put up 13 points in a playoff game where you're the offensive coordinator, it's not going to look good, especially, you know, when you have Derrick Henry and he only averages 2.2 yards per carry. The offense in general, I mean, was just god-awful, less than 5 yards per play on the day, John. And I think you never want to let one game decide how you feel about a coach, right? I mean, you should look at the entire body of work for Arthur Smith. It's only been 2 seasons, but it's harder to have kind of a worse game and a worse showing than the Titans offense did against the Ravens.
Well, and this was the time to show it. Like, this is when the games matter. If you had a couple of bad regular season games, it's like, okay, whatever, we'll look at the rest. But this was the playoffs. This is when it matters. And once they shut down Derrick Henry, they couldn't do anything else, which was something I was worried about, which was, is Derrick Henry everything for this game plan? Does he rely on the heavy run game, a really good top five running back, to make himself successful? Because once Derrick Henry got shut down, Ryan Tannehill couldn't save them. And there's a lot of people saying this is why you don't overpay Ryan Tannehill. Well, this is probably why you don't go after Arthur Smith. I know the previous postseason he had a really good showing beating the Ravens and beating the Patriots, but could that just be his one time being good, or could this year be his one time being bad? And, you know, there's just so much inconsistency right there. It really makes me question getting him.
I mean, yeah, I think it is just one game, and I think if he has one, you know, two good playoff performances and one bad playoff performance, but I would say that I'm not going to say it's one bad year. I mean, maybe one bad year in the playoffs, I think, is what you're saying. But, I mean, they were still one of the best offenses in the league this year. And it seemed to me in this game, more than other games where I've watched Arthur Smith, he just seemed determined to feed Derrick Henry even when it wasn't working. Because the Titans got off to a quick start. They got up 10-0, and it just didn't seem like they made the proper adjustments to keep going after that. It seemed like Baltimore figured out what they were doing, and Baltimore had a really great game defensively. I mean, it's not like they were just somebody that could be walked over. I mean, they had a really good game. They had a talented defense out there, but I think the forcing Derrick Henry on those runs, I mean, converting only 25% of your third downs, it's not a good look. To me, I don't think Arthur Smith is totally not an option for me now, but I definitely think it at least raises one red flag of, okay, look, you know, this type of offense can get shut down like that. But I honestly just think it was one bad showing for him, David, just at a terrible time.
Yeah, I mean, it's at the moment where all eyes are on him and on the moves that he makes and the adjustments he makes and the adjustments he doesn't make. And that was one of the things that I was paying attention to in this game, was that I think he tried to get that running game going a little bit too much, and it was a little bit too late in the ball game. He was still trying to do it in the fourth quarter, and I know they were making a big fuss about how Derrick Henry really, you know, breaks down his, you know, the opponents, the defense in the fourth quarter. He runs for 7 yards a carry, whatever. But you could tell during the flow of that game that Derrick Henry wasn't getting like anything at all. They were really selling out to shut him down. And then you would think, okay, well, let's throw the ball a little bit more. Let's switch it up. Let's do some of those things that they like to do and manipulate those formations to where it might look like they're trying to run, but they, you know, they need to go to the air. And they just didn't do that enough in this football game. But yes, you can't take one performance and allow it to overshadow your entire opinion of that coach and what he's been able to do. He still had a great year. He's still in the playoffs back-to-back years. And so that still counts for something. I mean, does this performance give you a little bit of pause? Sure, maybe a little bit, but I don't think it's a warranting, you know, removing him from the list.
Yeah, I think I feel the same way about it, but it definitely made you wonder just a little bit. And I think at this time of year, especially with owners who can, you know, kind of make rash decisions at times, I think it is important. But flipping the script to a guy who had a really, really good performance over the weekend, that is Brandon Staley. Obviously, he's the defensive prodigal son for Sean McVay and the Rams defense, who took over for Wade Phillips, and all he's done is, you know, been the best defense in the league, and it showed up again in the playoffs against the Seahawks. And it's one of those things, again, I mean, one game isn't going to, you know, change the way you feel about it, but the one game was really what we've seen from Brandon Staley's defense the entire postseason. I think he's one of the guys, especially if the Rams make a run with how bad their offense has been, is only going to raise his profile, John, because that Rams offense has not been good at all with whatever quarterback they've had out there. And this defense has not only kept them in games, but has won him games. So sacking Russell Wilson 5 times, keeping him to 11 of 27 passing in the game. I mean, that doesn't seem like a Russell Wilson stat, but I know that you're not totally sold on Brandon Staley for other reasons. It's not, you know, what he's been able to do on the field. It's his age and being able to command a locker room and all those things. But at the same time, he does have a chance to raise his profile with a good run going up against some really good offenses.
Well, it's not so much what he can do in a locker room. It's more of, is this his team? Is he actually the reason for the success? That was my biggest thing on him, because it's his first year with the team, and the team's defense was already good the previous year. So it's not like he changed.
I mean, it was pretty average last year, but
it's not like he really changed a lot. He still has Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, but with the performance that he had in the playoffs, he he gains a little bit more of my respect, especially since his he had two quarterbacks. He had John Wolford and Jared Goff with a messed up hand. That is a messed up offense, and because his defense did well enough, the Rams were actually able to use their strength, which is their running backs, and continued to use their running backs because their defense kept them in the game. If the defense did not do its job and the Rams fell behind, they would have had to rely on those quarterbacks for this game, but they didn't have to do that. The defense is what won them the game, so this performance really earned me some respect for him, really.
Yeah, and I mean, next and week he gets Green Bay, you know, and that'll be another great test.
The Rams have two takeaways in a playoff game for the first time since 2001, and that was an NFC championship game. And that's one thing that we've seen all year from Brandon Staley's defense is, I mean, the number one scoring defense in the league, also second in sacks, I mean, first in passing yards allowed. His defense has been getting it done all year long, and it is the main reason why the Rams are where they're at right now.
And that 2001 Rams team had the greatest show on turf, too. He don't have that.
Well, and they haven't been a ton of playoff appearances since then. I mean, they did have a pretty long stretch of, you know, Jeff Fisher days, 8-8, and just a lot of mediocrity. But, yes, I mean,
Mr. Mediocrity himself.
Brandon Staley's the real deal. I mean, and he'll have another chance to do it, because if he keeps him in the game next week against that Green Bay Packers offense, that would be something to see, and it could be one of those situations where one guy gets super hot throughout the playoffs and probably lands himself in a head coaching position, and whether that's to be the Chargers or not, we'll find out. They did interview him on Sunday, so they have met. After that performance, it must have been a fun conversation for him to have, feeling as confident as ever. But we do have two more guys who faced off against each other coming up in the next segment, because we'll talk about Brian Daboll's game against Matt Eberflus and the Colts, and Brian Daboll and the offense pulling it off for the Bills coming up right after this. But first, I need to tell you guys that Built Bar is the best protein bar on the planet. For me, guys, it's always about taste, and that's what I love about Built Bar. Unlike some other protein bars that I've tried, is just they all taste great. I mean, they have a bunch of flavors that I like, a bunch of flavors to choose from, 18 different flavors, banana bread, peanut butter, double chocolate, toffee almond, pretty much any flavor you can think of, they'll have some variation of that, and they're all 100% covered in chocolate and soft and easy to chew. They're great for whatever kind of diet you're trying to get into, especially for the keto diet as well, because they're all low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber. And right now we have a special deal for our listeners. If you guys go to BuiltBar.com, you can use the promo code LOCKEDON to get 20% off your next order. Doesn't have to be your first order. Any order from BuiltBar.com, you can use that promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word, for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, well, it's time to get into the final segment of the show, and I'm glad we can be here with you guys to have some good content to talk about, because we are getting to watch these coordinators that the Chargers, you know, have interviewed or are going to interview. In this case, for Brian Daboll, they met with him on Sunday. Eberflus is supposed to interview with the team today, and this was a game, I think, where both coaches had a good showing. Obviously, the Colts end up going home and lose 27-24 with the Bills, but I still think that Eberflus had a good game plan out there. But I think the one that everyone wants to start with is Brian Daboll, because Brian Daboll's team got it done. And not only that, they got off to a slow start, John, and then they ended up making adjustments that ended up helping them move the ball and score in this game, and especially later in the game. I mean, scoring out of three out of their last four drives in the second half, and also, you know, being aggressive even to the end of the game when it didn't work. So when you're talking about guys whose stock has gone up over the weekend and Super Wild Card weekend, I think Daboll definitely checks that box.
Without a doubt. I mean, they both guys really move up a little bit. One of them had to lose. I mean, they went up against each other. You're not going to get a tie in the playoffs. So I don't think a win or a loss really should decide much here, because they both performed really well as coordinators. But the way Daboll was able to take how bad the offense was moving, switch some things around, all of a sudden you just can't stop his offense in a playoff situation, a win or go home situation, I think it really elevates him even more, as this might just be the guy. The Chargers really should go in on him based on this game. But there's also going to be a couple other games probably. I'm pretty sure the game against the Ravens is going to tell a lot, because you're going to have to go, the Bills defense is pretty good, but they're going to go up against Lamar Jackson, who could probably still put up some points. Is his offense going to be able to keep up? Or is his offense going to be able to keep Lamar Jackson off the field? There's a lot of things you're going to be able to see next week. But with this performance against a really good Colts defense and Colts defensive coordinator, he really moves up the board. Even if he's not number one on your board, he has to be at least really close by now.
I mean, he stays number one, I think, on all of our boards, and I don't think that the weekend changed that. I mean, Staley definitely keeps moving up, and I'm very intrigued by that. But Brian Daboll comes through again, comes through in the playoffs, and does all the things that you want to see from your offensive coordinator. He, you know, comes up with some big plays when they need it, plays a 35, 36, and 37. They use their best weapon effectively, Stephon Diggs, 6 for 128 in a touchdown, and they only had 96 rushing yards. I mean, the running backs in that game weren't great, but Josh Allen picks up for, you know, 11 carries and 54 yards and also gets the touchdowns. But, David, I do think that for Brian Daboll, the things that you really impressed me, at least, was you have a great two-minute drive going into halftime. You get a touchdown in a minute and 32 seconds. You don't leave the Colts any time to put up any points. And even at the end of the game, it didn't work out. Josh Allen takes a huge sack. He fumbles. They lose a ton of yards. But Brian Daboll was out there being aggressive and trying to do whatever it took to win the game. He wasn't just sitting there trying to run the clock out.
Exactly. And I mean, I think in the first half, you look at it and you're like, yeah, I mean, the Bills are up 14-10, but you like what Eberflus was able to do there. I mean, I think you would comfortably say that he had the better first half, even though he was down on the scoreboard. But then Brian Daboll comes back, makes adjustments, like John said, and changes some things up, and then they're moving the football down the field and they're scoring points. And they're, you know, that's something that's so incredible to watch after watching offenses from year after year, and defenses for that matter, that would not make any adjustments, in-game adjustments, to be able to change the fortune of the game. It just seems like they would, you know, formulate a game plan during the week and they would stick to it bar none. And that's just not how you win games in the NFL. So watching these coaches, these coordinators here, be able to adjust their game plans and really try to play that game of chess and see who's going to come out on top, that's something that's really refreshing. And, yeah, I mean, you can't help but be impressed by Brian Daboll's ability to make those adjustments and stay aggressive to try to put that foot on the throat and win that football game. And ultimately, that's what he did.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny in these type of games because one person's, you know, advantages and the things that they did well are things that the other coach did not do well, right? So I think that one of the places that the Bills did struggle with was third down. I mean, they were 2 of 9 on third down conversions. They had to settle for a couple of field goals in the second half. And I think those are both feathers in Eberflus's cap, John, because really the Colts defense in this game gave them a chance to win the game. I mean, there's a lot of missed opportunities by the Colts offense, a lot of bad decisions, drop passes, things like that. I mean, that really went against the Colts offense because they definitely could have put up more than 27 points and won this game. So the Colts defense, even though they gave up 27 points, I mean, in the second half, you hold them the 2 field goal drives, you get the late stop at the very end of the game to get your offense the ball back when you're only down by 3 points. I mean, his defense still made enough plays to win the game. And I think going up against that offense is something you should feel good about.
Without a doubt. I mean, if the Colts, say, make their field goal and then kick a field goal on that 4th and 2, this game is totally different. Now there's 6 more points on the board for the Colts side. Now you're sitting here saying that you were relying on Daboll's offense to go and win the game for the Bills instead of the Colts defense having to keep them in it. So the Colts defense definitely played well enough for them to win this game in a playoff game against a high-powered offense. To say that he made a great adjustment towards the end, I mean, it's kind of hard. He didn't really make the greatest adjustments. They still were able to move the ball in the end of the game, but he showed up when they needed him the most. And I think that shows a lot from a coordinator, and I think a coach can do that kind of stuff a lot. You see games like the Ravens with John Harbaugh, he helps that team make the plays when they need to, whether it's on defense or on offense throughout his whole coaching career. He makes those kind of moves, and I think Eberflus can show that kind of stuff based in this game.
Yeah, and in the second half, it is hard to argue about the adjustments, but the one thing they did do was get off the field on third down, and that led to a punt at the very end of the game, and then 2 field goal attempts where either one of those times, if the Bills get a touchdown, it almost puts the game away. So even though they gave up, you know, 13 points in the second half, 14 points in the first half, I mean, that's pretty evened out. But at the same time, going up against a really, really good offense with a defense that has only really a few name, you know, household name players, I thought it was a heck of a performance. And I mean, it definitely sucked to see Phillip Rivers and them get bounced out of the playoffs, especially in what could be Phillip Rivers' last game. And of course, if it was, we wish all the best to Phil, and he goes down as a Hall of Famer and one of the best Chargers of all time. But we also do get a chance to see Brian Daboll continue and see how that, you know, looks now against the Ravens. So I think that is something that I'm excited to watch. But Eberflus, I thought he had a good performance. He wasn't at the top of my list to begin things. He's not at the top of my list now, but I also don't think he did anything to hurt his stock. That is going to have to do it for today's show. We'll continue talking about the Chargers coaching search throughout the week. We're going to try to get some good guests to come on the show to talk about it with us as well. So make sure you guys check in throughout the week. Until then, make sure to go follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us wherever you get your podcast from, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. And it's the fastest and easiest way to get the show. And if you guys rate and review, we would always appreciate that. If you guys want to get your voicemails on the show, we'll definitely be doing a voicemail show this week. The number is 323-524-7924. And we're trying to get every Chargers voicemail played on the show. But that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow. But until then, take it easy and go Bolts.